Hey everyone, time to kick off another exciting edition of our DevOps Office Hours. It's September 6th, 2023. My name's Eric Osterman and I'll be your host. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse helps teams conquer AWS using our rock solid Terraform blueprints. Whether you're starting from scratch or just not satisfied with your current setup, book a session with me directly by going to cloudposse.com/quiz, answer a few quick questions, and we'll have a call to show exactly how your team will succeed. For those of you new to the call, the format is very informal. My goal is to get your questions answered. If you're curious about Cloud Posse or any of our awesome open source tools and projects, this is a great place to ask. For those of you joining from our podcast or YouTube channel, you can register for these live and interactive sessions by heading to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. We host these calls every week, so don't miss out. Our call today is recorded. We'll post a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. If you want to support what we do over here, please hit those like and subscribe buttons. It helps us out a great deal. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse. Also, if you found something interesting on today's session, it's a great place to find that video so you can share it with the rest of your team to keep everyone on the same page. And with that said, let's get into some announcements here. So the first one is a small one. Amazon add support for vended control plane logs. I know it's been raised by other customers that they didn't find the logs that they wanted, but I'm not 100% sure if this is it. Were all of these logs available through the EKS control plane and now you can subscribe to individual ones directly?
I think the difference is they were available to be sent to CloudWatch logs before, but now when they're tagged as vended, you get like a discount on sending that volume to CloudWatch because they have like a different pricing.
It's kind of like, so I mean, otherwise Amazon is kind of like their own ATM machine, just like generate logs to generate more money. So they're doing that. Yeah. That's fair.
So they tag, I think it says there, like now you can see in the second paragraph that it's all the API service logs, the audit log, IAM authenticator log, like all those things are now being published there. And and there you go. That now there's a special price for that. I don't remember the details of how much less it is. I just remember that you get some sort of volume discount for it.
Vlad, can you talk more about vended logs? Anything you know about?
Yeah, this is purely a pricing change. So if you're sending a bunch of logs, Eric, if you scroll down a bit, so you can see here that there are volume discounts available and people were very excited that the noisy and very specific EKS logs are now going to be able to take advantage of these discounts. It's a pricing change as far as I understand it.
Okay. Yeah. So if you scroll back up, so this one's 50 cents a gig. If you scroll back up to the normal pricing, I think it's
It's 50 cents a gig if it's normal. And if you are doing vendor logs, you get discounts down to what's the official one? 5 cents a gig.
Yeah. Once you're doing terabytes.
Yeah, I think the data stored is different too. Like, I think it's the 3 cents. It's like 3 cents for that data stored per gig. And if you scroll back up, I think it's higher on the other one. Oh no, I guess not. I don't know. Don't know. Maybe it's only when you get to the volumes, the higher volumes, that you get significant discounts.
Yeah, I'm also not very up to date with the pricing, so I cannot
tell for sure. But I don't pay the bills.
I don't know how big it is.
Yeah, that's the same way. I don't pay any AWS bills, or the ones I pay are a couple hundred bucks a month. So I don't really, I don't really pay too much attention to it.
Here was just a small little thing that came across my newsfeed. It didn't change anytime recently. This is not, you know, obviously in response to anything that has recently happened with projects adopting Boosal, but it shows how Boosal can suppress distribution by certain popular operating systems like Fedora.
Yeah, I think there what they're doing is they're just making sure that any contributions that have like to Fedora itself that have any like downstream dependencies, it's making sure that none of those downstream dependencies are distributed under Boosal, because the overall Fedora is distributed under MIT. So I think they're just being careful that they don't accidentally embed something that has this commercial poison pill, as we've been calling it recently, under the hood.
This is interesting. I haven't looked closer at this. How are they? It looks like they have. Is this a standard schema format that they've come up? Is this a custom schema format that they've come up with, or is this like some open source tooling? And is this something that projects can adopt themselves to ensure license compatibility?
Yeah, I think this whole project is called Fedora License Data. So I'm assuming that that's like their own tooling to make sure that happens.
That's cool.
But I don't know how it works under the hood. I just know that I read that that's what it seems to be doing.
Yeah. Well, for all you old farts out there that have been on AWS for a little while, myself included, this is where I got my start. It was 2005 or something. There were only, M1 Smalls at the time. And we tried to build our startup on it. Let's just say that Amazon still exists, but that startup did not. there were no Amazon load balancers or anything else. Anyways, EC2 classics, these were the EC2 instances that were not deployed in a VPC because they predated VPCs. Due to Amazon's early or initial success, still a lot of enterprises had adopted these. We have a customer that had some legacy account somewhere. They just finally got off of EC2 classics as well in advance of the deadline. But that's the end of an era. This is what started the public cloud, if you ask me. Any other tributes to EC2 classic? All right. something clickbait worthy. I don't know. I tried my luck at it. And I suck at Amazon icons. I wonder how everyone else does. They've got, as Amazon just adds and adds to the cheesecake menu of cloud services, it's so hard to interpret all of these icons other than the ones we interact with every single day. All right, who knows this one? What is this? My guess would be SWF. But I don't know.
It's Lambda, but it's the really old icon that has been deprecated for forever.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. That was the right answer. All right. Let's see. What else? I was really excited about this one. We're doing a lot with Markdown at Cloud Posse on GitHub. So GitHub flavored Markdown. They're really useful for GitHub Actions and job summaries. In addition to, obviously, you know, everyone uses Markdown for readmes, right? But GitHub has also added the ability to produce job summaries if you're using GitHub Actions. So anything you can do to help enrich those summaries is beneficial. That's why I'm really happy about this. If you're using DocuSaurus or any of the other popular static site documentation systems, they have this concept of an admonition. Now GitHub has that too. This is in beta. They haven't committed to the syntax yet. It is subject to change. To use, for example, a note, you have to use exactly this format. It has to be a quote or citation reference here, and then star star note star star, and then you get an admonition that looks like this. Next, I came across this newsletter randomly this past week. What I liked about it is seems heavily curated, lots of projects, AWS centric, related to open source, lots of content. So if you're thirsty for more open source projects and things going on in AWS, that looked interesting to me. And one of the biggest criticisms of OpenTF is, you know, where's the fork, WTF? And now we have that fork. So this has been in progress for several weeks now. Due to legal reasons, it wasn't yet made public. Now it is made public. The name OpenTF, you know, subject to change. And there's ongoing discussions around that name and some legal concerns as well. But if you, but for transparency's sake, it is public now. You can open issues here with suggestions. All right. And next is the OpenTF project made the technology radar for O'Reilly, along with obviously many other projects as well. All right, there was some huge snafu with Zoom. Was it this week, Matt? Were you the one telling me about that?
I think it was a couple of weeks ago, like the beginning of August, maybe something like that, or the beginning middle of August.
Yeah, they basically said all your data on Zoom belongs to us.
Yeah, any they said any audio, video, or visual graphics that you shared via Zoom were the sole property of Zoom, and they could use it for any purpose that they wanted, anything that was legal, basically. And everyone like threw up their hands and screamed about it, and they backed off of the license. But I don't know if they now have. Oh, there it still says that they backed down, but are they going to come back again with some other version of that?
It's really interesting because, I just suspected it was because they wanted to start doing AI. And with AI, you really have no way of coordinating that data off correctly. So yeah. I guess that was why. I wonder what this does to their plans.
Hopefully someone writes a tighter license. Like, I think most people, I mean, the problem with Zoom is that you are often talking on internal, you know, internally and sharing proprietary information and ideas, right, and all those kind of things. And if you're training learning models with those things, especially things that may not be out in the wild yet, it's kind of it's a slippery slope for intellectual property.
Yeah, I can understand why business would be skittish. As an end user, I would just love to be able to go to Zoom and, you know, ask questions of a conversation, or even especially meetings I wasn't able to attend, things like that.
I mean, that's the scary part, though, is if you ask it a question, or, you know, some competitor of yours asks it a question and it answers, Eric's super secret strategy for taking over the world is the best way to approach this, you know? And then you're like, what?
Yeah.
It's actually even worse. There are bots that can do that for you, but they are often blocked in companies because the second you have that bot, that becomes official company product. So every single meeting and every single conversation had by anybody can now be subpoenaed. That is something that a lot of people do not want. And those types of bots were very, very, very early blocked, and a whole spew of startups got instantly dead.
Brave new world. All right. Another exciting announcement, and I see we have none other than the Pepe Amengual here, aka Jose. So Pepe, you want to tell us about what's going on with Atlantis?
Sure. Yeah. Pretty excitement announcement. We are pretty happy that actually we end up here. We actually tried to do this before, but Luke and HashiCorp were not willing to move the project to CNCF, and then RV, thanks to his relentless idea, he created an issue and basically just, you know, forced Luke and HashiCorp to like, please give us an official answer so we can put this to rest if the answer is no. But we got a pretty good surprise, and so they allow us to actually commit it to the CNCF. So we created the issue to start as a sandbox. Most probably, we are not going to be a sandbox project. We will be incubated right away, but there is a lot of work to do to get there. Yeah, and so that's how it kind of happens, and that's how we are here. So we are doing all the transferring and stuff. So, and Luke is going to back down the project. So the owners of Atlantis will be basically CNCF, and we will become the maintainers from now on.
That's so cool, yeah. Pepe. Yeah, you've been following this project for a long time, and
yes,
kind of been promoted and risen through the ranks to become a maintainer. It's exciting for me to see you do that. Also, RB. So, fun fact: Pepe and RB were both at Cloud Posse at some point in time. So fun to see this, you guys, you know, taking charge of your own project.
Yeah, it's a full circle, because the way I got it to Atlantis was because of a PR that was created by you guys, Andre, in and it was actually closed in the in Atlantis, and that's how I actually started on the Atlantis project. I started learning Go to try to actually bring that code into version 13 of Atlantis. Yeah. And then that when that got merged, then I made so much noise that I end up, you know, Luke asked me, do you want to be a maintainer? I was like, sure. And that's where everything started. So, yeah. So full circle.
Yeah. It actually, not that I want to put Luke on the spot, but it probably puts Luke in a pretty bad position if it didn't go this way, because being employed by HashiCorp with their change in licensing models, if anyone were using Atlantis in a production way that was deemed to be competing with HashiCorp's cloud offerings, he would be in a weird spot being a HashiCorp employee and also maintaining that open source project. So this is probably best for the project overall.
Yeah. And we did get actually official approval from HashiCorp as Atlantis not being part of, you know, not being against the new license. So
that was a good thing too. More than the GitHub comment, you got like an email or a letter or something?
Well, the GitHub comment is still the official answer.
Oh, okay.
I guess we will get an official one after we move it to the CNCF, but yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems to be okay for now.
until someone creates the, you know, hosted offering of this and takes some money for it, and then it obviously it competes. So yeah, it's crazy.
And also, to be clear, this would be a transfer, right? Not a fork?
It would be a transfer. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. We are going to become the owners very soon, maybe next week. So we will be the owners of the repo from now on. And then we will transfer it to the CNCF.
And then you can transfer
correct.
It in.
Okay. That's right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. How can people help support you?
Just, you know, give us some thumbs up in the issue. That would be good. And you know, and once, you know, is moved to the CNCF, obviously, you know, start, you know, contributing to Atlantis. You know, there has been a lot of conversations in the past about some companies not willing to use Atlantis because of the relationship with HashiCorp 2 and all that. This actually, I think, will help Atlantis in the long run as building a more structure community. So that's why we are pretty excited about it.
And that's very cool. Also, maybe CNCF can help sponsor your Slack community as well.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other things that you get from them, which is pretty cool. And we are, you know, eager to, you know, be graduated. But there is a lot of work to do. I have been going through the documentation and all that, and there is a lot of things that we need to get done before we get there. But yeah.
Any questions for Pepe?
Was HashiCorp still allocating any effort to Atlantis, or was it just a community project? I know Luke hasn't been working on it for a while.
Yeah, Luke hasn't been, I mean, if you look at the history, he hasn't been committing code for, I don't know, 4 years or so. So, and HashiCorp has been allowing the facilitation of, you know, creating maintainers groups and all that kind of stuff. So they have been very, you know, hands off from anything. They don't even get involved. I mean, the only thing that we only got was a Zoom link. You know, is it, they never got involved in conversations or decisions about adding features or anything like that. So we actually had a lot of freedom to do whatever we wanted or merge whatever we wanted. I certainly merged few regressions. So, you know, but anyhow, it happens. So if you ask me personally, I never thought that HashiCorp was like on top of looking at me like a, you know, like a dark cloud, and nothing like that. So, but certainly because of the license change and all that, there is a certain feeling or karma associated to it, I guess. So I think moving over makes it a clear separation of concerns, I guess. So I think it's better anyways.
Vlad brings up a good point that a security review of Atlantis would make a lot of folks feel more comfortable with it, and the CNCF usually pays for that, he said.
Yes, and funny enough, one of the things that why we haven't actually released version one is because of the code QL reports we have, which we can only see, and that we don't have time to work on it because we don't have enough contributors to actually make that work and actually clear all those up so that we can do release 1.1, 1.0. So what we hope to that it will happen is, thanks to the support of the CNCF and all these tools, we will be able to actually work on this on the security review, get it all figured out, and as soon as it's moved to the CNCF, we can release 1.0.
Sweet. Any more questions for Pepe? All right, next announcement is a small one, but I thought it was kind of interesting. I think I'd noticed this before at some point, that S3, when you queried the endpoint for it, you'd only ever get one IP back. Now Amazon will return up to 8 IPs, so you can just, you know, smash the crap out of the S3 endpoint if you need to. And another project I came across randomly, I hadn't heard of it before, by ErgoMake, called Layerform. Another project to help manage Terraform environments, targeting more developers to create consistent environments with greater ease. I haven't looked at it personally, but yeah, it's got 1,000 stars.
I think if this is the same project that I'm thinking of, and I might be conflating it with something else, but I think there's actually, they actually have checks in there so that if you try to modify any resource that's created by a lower layer in the stack, which I thought was pretty cool.
And can you explain that again? I didn't follow.
So like, let's say you create like your VPC as a component, and then right there, like on the diagram that's right there, you have your VPC, then Kubernetes, then you have your topic on top of it. Like, and then, so if anything in your Kubernetes like layer, if that were like defined as a layer and deployed separately, if anything in that tried to modify a resource that was deployed by your VPC layer, it actually like stops you from doing that. So that you can't basically mutate infrastructure that was created by something at a lower layer. Yeah, there it is, the layer immutability and layer rebasing thing. Yeah, I thought this was the project. I read it a while ago, but I haven't actually done this. I've only read it, but it does something with the plan to see if you're like mutating resources that you shouldn't be, basically.
Hmm. That's cool. I
and
do
that,
like
the... and that way you can give more, like, you can give more freedoms to people without having to rely solely on IAM permissions for things. Like in this case, like there's a built-in check to make sure that you're not mutating resources that you shouldn't be.
All right. Let's see, any more announcements? Nope, that was the last one.
Vlad actually posted a couple. Oh, he just reposted in the channel. I was gonna point you to what he just reposted.
Let's see here.
Yeah, these were just two new announcements from GitHub to their public roadmap. So they cannot be used now. They're not a thing, but they're gonna be a thing potentially maybe sometime in the future. This is just what was this one? Oh yeah, controlling outbound network access from GitHub hosted runners. So this is gonna make a lot of people very happy, because right now, if you wanna control stuff, you need to run your own runners and in your own VPC, and you can do whatever you want there. But this is gonna be way easier.
Yeah, now just try to get a comprehensive list of all the AWS endpoints.
Hopefully it comes with a UI to click, 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 allow, allow, allow. Because otherwise, yeah, this is going to be tedious.
And the second one was interesting because that was Copilot is getting a reference check, which is basically, hey, Copilot suggested, I think this is Copilot. Yeah, GitHub Copilot. So if GitHub Copilot suggests, hey, you should use this code, it's going to tell you, and we took it from this repository with this license, which is something that Amazon's Code Whisperer did have when it launched. So it was interesting to see this also coming to Copilot.
How does it know? I wonder if it learned a pattern across like many, many repositories where people are using that same kind of pattern. How does it know what to attribute that to, I wonder?
It know, I'm speaking about Code Whisperer here, but it knows not for all code, but for some code. Like if it's a general pattern and it did enough changes and the sources are murky, it's not gonna tell you where it got it from. But if it's like, hey, we pretty much copy-pasted this part from this open source repository, we're also gonna show you the source, the license, whatever. It was genuinely an awesome feature in Code Whisperer, because then you could look at the source and see like, oh, that's what they're doing, or be like, oh yeah, this source is this super fancy repo that I trust. It's not Vlad proof of concept 2018.
Yeah.
Bad.
Okay, well, let's any more announcements before we get going? Also, Vlad had some additional ones, I think, above from AWS. What were they?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yes. I was so confused. Yeah, they're tiny. They were in the Slack.
Oh, that's where
What was it?
Oh, I got it.
AWS SAM support for Terraform is now GA. It was in preview for a while. It's now generally available. It's pretty nice. Basically, if you're using Anton's serverless.tf modules or any other Terraform modules to manage Lambda functions, you can now use SAM with that. So you can do stuff like local builds, local invokes, generating tests, getting the logs locally while you're developing and using both the code and Terraform. It's a pretty nice integration.
Yeah, before when you would run like SAM deploy, it would just hook CloudFormation, and it would basically build stuff with the CloudFormation template. And now they're giving you the ability to just use your own Terraform module. I think that's kind of the TLDR to do that.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's because the SAM CLI is pretty nice. Like, developers love it.
Yeah, it's really good for local testing of lambdas that you're building.
Okay.
And this has been in preview for a while. They took all the feedback, like they really listened. It was lovely. Like props to the Sam team. And the other thingy that I passed, that I pasted was the SES now tracks every single email, which is going to make a lot of people very happy and eliminate a bunch of support tickets.
And it's going to make a lot of privacy people very unhappy.
Well, it tracks people in the sense that it shows you the data. They already had the data. But now there's no more ticket to support to figure out what happened. It's just in the virtual deliverability manager thingy. I know a lot of people were very, very, very excited about this release.
I saw a lot of people excited about it.
All right. Any more announcements that we can bring up today from anyone? Okay, let's go into Q&A. I think Matt Gowie had a question from last week, but I don't see Matt on the call. So maybe we'll punt on that until next week when he might be back.
I have a question.
Go for it, Ralph.
How much of an effort do you think it would be to translate all the modules into Azure?
I know there's no translation. I mean, it's all just pure rewrite. Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a pure rewrite. I think I could write a script that might replace certain commands of AWS into certain commands of Azure.
I mean, the architectures of the APIs and the underlying resources and all of the properties that you need to pass to them, et cetera, are like vastly different.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
there is no easy way
I've
to
done
automate.
some, I've done some, just to give you that, and I'm not just saying that, I've actually done some work on this, where I built some Azure modules that are publicly available. And like the way that you actually do it is just completely different. The Azure Resource Manager, the concept of accounts doesn't really exist in Azure. It's like subscription IDs. It's like a whole, everything is just significantly different. And the resources themselves are named differently and have different properties and have different life cycles for applying them and making them work together.
Some of those things are not problems, but when you say that the architecture is different, that is the only part that scares me.
I think maybe you're thinking about and trying to digest this problem at much too high of a level if you haven't like gotten down and looked at the
No,
if
I
you
have
haven't
not.
looked at the APIs yet. Yeah, I
I have
think
not.
when you start to look, just to give you a quick example, like you know the Azure, like Azure doesn't have an actual like a VPC that lines up the same exact way as like Amazon has a VPC. And the properties, the resource name is completely different, right? So you have to underline when you have resource AWS VPC, you're going to have like resource, whatever it is, Azure RM virtual network or whatever. But then from there, like you may be able to get to that level of substitution, but then from there, the property names, what they mean, how you create storage groups, how you can create network firewall rules, how you do VPC peering, how you do ... is completely different between
So my
the two
only
clouds. So
my, my, my
it
only
doesn't really
experience
translate.
my only experience with this is having moved Ops Cloud, which is a proprietary thing, from AWS to Azure. And we lost some of the functionality because Azure just was different.
Well, then that's the key thing is that any sort of translation would have to assume a lowest common denominator. And when you do a lowest
Yeah,
common
yeah.
denominator, you lose the strategic advantages that each
Yes.
cloud offers. So you might be able to solve it at a level, but you really don't get the outcome that was desired.
So let me ask you a bigger question. Is it possible to be multi-cloud?
Well, I think it means so many different things, and there is a great video out there.
So we were multi-cloud in the sense that we had infrastructure running on different clouds.
Yeah.
But we weren't multi-cloud in the strictest sense that we could send
right.
workloads to different clouds in an automated fashion.
Right. And this is where too few companies have the finances to support that, pure multi-cloud that you're talking about. And this is where Armon talks about, you don't choose multi-cloud, multi-cloud chooses you.
like that.
It's basically, your company, you acquire other companies, those companies are operating in other clouds. Voila, you're multi-cloud. It's not a strategy. It is.
I've ever only talked to one engineer.
I could qualify it as well. Oh, sorry.
I've only ever talked to one engineer who claimed that they did multi-cloud. He worked for Twitter at the time. This was pre-pandemic. Probably doesn't have a job, but anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna give a more concrete example from my experience. I was working at a startup that did video dialing for folks who are deaf and mute. And in that process, if somebody's trying to do sign language and the signal at all, if the video goes under 30 frames per second, they become unintelligible to the other party. So we actually deployed a lot of our different Camilo instances onto AWS, but we found that when we were doing transcoding, we had to actually put them closer to a stronger network. And we found that actually the best network for keeping consistent video was on GCP. So we ended up going to Google Compute for a lot of the different pieces that were at risk of being bottlenecked. And we found that it was actually just a much cleaner network. And it's hard to describe how that works. It's just the best way to say it is, when you try to make a conversation between Verizon and T-Mobile, the hoops that they make you jump through with SIP, it just it can be very sensitive to what the trunks are that are going into the data centers. And so we found that it was night and day for the people. And they were like, yep, we can actually understand each other. So we were like, guess we're using both.
So for all you people who over the months have suggested that I should quit my job to solve the issues that I brought up here, I have to report that I am free now. I work for a small startup and I can actually accomplish what I want.
Well,
I can unequivocally say if you work for a small startup, you should not even be thinking about multi-cloud.
No, I'm...
I'm saying that seriously.
This question is left over from the last startup that I was in, just to be clear, okay? Yeah. We are happy on GCP. We're not moving, yeah. Okay?
Yeah, I've... the only experience I have is... I'll just say, I've done some work with